friends. I received a letter from Canada not very long ago in which a mother told me that her two children for a long time had been very quiet, and when they were quiet, she suspected they were up to some kind of mischief. One was a boy of 4 and the other little girl, 3. Finally, she found the boy in the attic, had on his coat and his hat, and he was carrying a suitcase. And she said, where's your little sister? She's in the suitcase. Well, where are you going? We're going down to New York to visit Bishop Shee. And this is another true story that came to me that actually happened here in New York in the family of one of the FBI agents. The little girl, aged 3 or 4, was watching her father paint a crib. What are you doing, Daddy? Painting a crib. What color? White. Where did you get the paint? Bought it at the store. Where did you get the brush? Bought it at the store, too. Daddy, at what time does the soul come into the body? When the body's about ready to receive it. Daddy, do you wear a girdle? That's an example of how a child's mind flies from one subject to another and shows also the result of listening to television. Late in February 1954, I gave a telecast on the death of Stalin. It was a funeral oration over the dictator. A few days later, on the 5th of March, his death was announced. We hope that what we're saying tonight will not be so prophetic. A word about the pattern of betrayal. The formula, a world revolution. We're going to show the pattern by which the Soviet Union hopes to take over the world. This proceeds in 3 steps. We'll mention the 3 and then describe each of them. This first principle applies only to themselves, namely materialism. That is their philosophy of life. The second applies to themselves and to us. It is the myth of coexistence. And the third step, which applies to both Soviet Union and ourselves, is destroy with a kiss. Now, this is the formula by which they have taken over so far about 33% of the world. 37 out of 100 people in the world are subject to them according to these ideas. First, materialism. Materialism, as you know, is their philosophy of life, which believes there's nothing but matter. There's no God, no soul. Now, why these two denials? They're intrinsic to communism. Why no God? Well, we can understand that. The second paragraph of our Declaration of Independence states that it is a self-evident principle that the Creator has endowed man with certain unalienable rights. In other words, we have rights and liberties, like freedom of press, freedom of conscience, freedom of association, which do not come from the government, which do not come from the will of a majority, which do not come from a state, These rights and liberties come to us from God. Therefore, the state cannot take them away. That is our principle. Now, they have to deny God, because that would be another source of rights than the state or the party. In order to build up this structure of theirs in which the party is supreme, they must hold that any right or liberty which the individual possesses comes to him from the party. Therefore, the party can take the rights and liberties away. But if there was a God, then they were right. There would be rights not dependent on the party. So they have to deny God. Second principle. There is no soul. Why that? Because the soul contemplates. And when one contemplates, one establishes personal relations with a reality which is not subject to social control. In other words, no one around me in society can control my thinking and my meditation. Now, communism cannot allow that. There may be no thoughts, no conclusions, no plans, except those approved by the government. And so their procedure is, first of all, to forestall any kind of contemplation with the soul by saying that it is a sign that you're a neurasthenic. And secondly, if you have any thoughts of your own, then by purges, by persecution, by drugs, and by starvation, and by standing for hours and hours before a blazing light, your thoughts are driven and expelled out of you. There can be no soul. Otherwise, you would have a retreat into which you could enter, where you would be free from the state. That's principle number one. The next, in order to destroy, there must be the myth of coexistence. Lenin said, communism must make use of every lie, deceit, strategy, in order to further world revolution. Manuilsky, addressing the Soviet Congress, repeated something from the ancients: those whom the gods destroy, they must first make blind. In other words, they must deceive them. So the communists say, let us coexist in peace, peace, peace. At the end of the 19th century, there was a great Russian writer by the name of Soloviev, who in his work, The Three Conversations, said that in the 20th century, a book would be written entitled Peace and Cooperation Among All Peoples. And it would be written by a dictator who would conquer the world. Do you know of any book that has a title like that? Why coexist? If, for example, listening to me, there's a young man and young woman in love, do you say, you, the young man, say to the young girl, let's coexist? Does a husband say to his wife, let's coexist? Unless they're fighting. New York does not say to New Jersey, let's coexist. Canada does not say to the United States, let us coexist. Why then does Russia ask for coexistence? Interesting, isn't it? Here's the answer. Here are five houses. House one, two, three, four. Oh, that's all we'll draw. Houses. In this house is Mr. A, who believes in heating his house by gas. Mr. B believes in heating his house by electricity. Mr. C, oil. Mr. D, what have I got left? Coal. I don't... In case there are some sponsors around the Michigan, they're in his business, I want to get them all in. Now it is agreed among them that they will use different forms of heating. There's no problem of coexistence among them. But suppose someone moves into a house down here whose name is Mr. K. Mr. K. Mr. K is an arsonist. Mr. K believes in heating his house with a kindling from A, B, C, and D. Can there be that kind of coexistence? Why does he ask for coexistence? He asks that the peaceful relations that exist between nations, free-loving nations, should be applied to a nation that does not believe in peace and justice. There cannot be that kind of coexistence. It is only a sham and a snare and a delusion. Why do they ask then for coexistence? Well, the answer was given in an article that appeared in the Communist Magazine of Russia in 1954, written by Leontief. Leontief in this article said, Russia was strong when it was a question of armies, because they had more men, more arms than any other nations of the world, than the other nations of the world, and could walk over them. But now there's come the atomic bomb. Since the atomic bomb, there can be mutual destruction. Soviet Union would be destroyed. So would other nations. So there must be, Mr. Leontief goes on to say, long periods of coexistence until the historic moment comes when we are ready to strike. When does that come? When does that happen? Well, that happens at a moment of greatest friendship. When a dictator visits another country to pledge loyalty and fidelity. As, for example, in 1939, when this treaty A treaty was signed between the Soviet Union and Latvia, Estonia, and Lithuania. Now, I could just as well read this off an idiot card, but the reason I'm not reading it off an idiot card, I'm reading, so I might just as well tell you. In an idiot card, I'd have to do this. I could use a teleprompter, and then I'd have to do this. So we're reading. These are the words of Molotov. These pacts of mutual assistance strictly stipulate the inviolability of the sovereignty of the signatory nations. Note that. The inviolability, in other words, of Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. 1939. And the principle of non-interference in each other's affairs. We stand for the scrupulous observance of these pacts. On the basis of complete reciprocity, and we declare that all talk is nonsense about the Soviet Union trying to Sovietize the Baltic countries. That in 1939, sovereignty of Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, they manage their own affairs. We will not Sovietize it. That was 1939, the moment of greatest friendship. 1940, Latvia, Estonia, and Lithuania were wiped off the earth as nations. Same with China. India is discovering it. Tibet is found out. In every single instance, a visit from a dictator. Some instances in Eastern Europe. Long parades, visit to the operas, pledges of friendship, drinking toasts one to another.
And then,
where did this formula come from?
Came from Judas. Those were his stages. First, materialism. Not just avarice. We do not know anything about the avarice of Judas until the very last part of the public life of our Lord. In fact, about 10 days before. Avarice is only a consequence of other sins. It is not first. The first mention we have of the fall of Judas was when our blessed Lord announced that he came from heaven, that he would die for men, and that he would rise again from the dead and ascend into heaven and give us the bread of life. He had multiplied loaves and fishes and fed several thousand. And then the people came to make him king. And our Lord refused to be a bread king and fled into the mountains alone. And Judas said, so that's the kind of a king he is. He's interested in spirituality. He's giving himself as the bread of life. Why doesn't he be an economic king? And at that mention of the Lord giving himself as the bread of life, you find written for the first time that our Lord knew it was who would betray him. He never believed. He was a materialist to the core. But that was for himself. Materialism is for the Soviet Union. Judas' second stage. Coexist with others. Lie. Deceive. Put on a false front. Pretend you're a friend. Never let anyone know your intentions. Talk of peace, peace, peace. Did anyone suspect Judas? Of course, our Lord did, because he is the Son of God. But I mean among men. John was the only one. And John kept it to himself. None of the other apostles knew. I think Peter was under more suspicion than Judas. Because when our Lord called Peter Satan, that's when there opened up a quarrel among them as to who would be first. Some, the mother of James and John, interceded for her sons, and after the transfiguration, the apostles quarreled as to who would be first. Even at the Last Supper, they quarreled. You say, but they knew that Judas was avaricious? Not necessarily. The night that Mary Magdalene poured ointment over the feet of our blessed Lord, all the other apostles, with the probable exception of John, joined in, saying, why could not this have been sold for 300 pence and given to the poor? Remember that Judas alone did not say it. The others did not know it was he. And then on the night of the Last Supper, our blessed Lord said, one, he who sits at table is about to betray me. And so each asked, except John, is it I? Is it I? Is it I? Is it I? Brazen Judas. Coexistence to the end. Is it I? Peter said to John, ask the Lord who it is. Our Lord said it was the one who would dip his finger in the dish. He reached it to Judas, but the others did not know the sign. And when Judas left, they did not know the business of Judas. The other apostles thought that Judas had gone out either to distribute money to the poor under the direction of our Lord, or else to buy food for the feast. they did not in any way suspect that he was a traitor. Deceit, friendship, pledges of cooperation, mutual assistance, love. Oh, we're brothers, all of us. And then, the third stage. When you have them all fooled, then it is that our blessed Lord meets him. And Judas came down over the brook of Kedron. Excuse me for looking down there, changing my watch. I want to find out how much time I've got. Only 1 minute left. Oh, the watch is wrong. I'm sorry. I have 2.5. I have 1 minute left. So we'll have to hurry very quickly. And Judas came down over the brook and threw his arms around the neck of our blessed Lord and blistered his lips with a kiss. And our Lord said, "Friend, wilt thou betray the Son of Man with a kiss?" Oh, yes. Some things are so sacred and divine, their betrayal must always be prefaced by some mark of affection. My fellow men, my countrymen, beware, lest you say, "Wouldst thou betray America with a kiss?"
This is Keene. We'll return in just a moment.
Mm-hmm. Casts are given for the benefit of the poor and the sick in Asia, Africa, Oceania, and other parts of the world. It is interesting how some people make sacrifices in order to help our cause. Here's a letter that just came in. "I received an invitation to attend a dinner for the Soviet dictator at the cost of $12.50 per person. Inflation or not, there are better uses for $12.50. Therefore, I am enclosing my check for $12.50 for all of the poor and the hungry of the world for whom you care, and for those behind the iron and bamboo curtains. Perhaps sometime you'd like to do without a dinner with the Soviet dictator for the sake of the poor. Would you? Bye now, and God love you."